Greetings, Tacoma. John Doherty here with you once again for KTAH 101.9's Climate Talk, the place where we work on digging into climate in an effort to understand what's going on, if anything, and what to do about it, if anything. The place where we're always respectful of others and where we stick to the facts as much as we can. We do our research, we do our homework, and we have clear consciences. This program is brought to you in part by Citizens Climate Education and the political branch Citizens Climate Lobby. And you can send me an email to tacoma@citizensclimatelobby.org anytime. I read every email I receive, and I'll respond online and over the air as appropriate if you send me an email. Looking forward to hearing your thoughts, especially if you disagree or you have some perspective that is missing in my comments. So today we're going to have some fun. One of my favorite things to talk about are the deceptions and the myth-making that climate science deniers like to put forward. And I got to say, they're really good at it. The stuff they put out can be deceiving. Some of it's pretty transparent, but some of it's like, that's interesting. And my answer in all cases is, okay, let's dig in and see what's going on. So today we're going to be talking about what I'd call a bit of world-class science denier deception. And I have to insert here that I'm not sure what the motivation was of the originator of this deception. It's fair to say, I believe, that plenty of the climate science deniers fully, legitimately, and honestly believe that climate change is not real, and the information they put out comes from the heart and their full belief. There are others who are clearly deceiving, and they know they're deceiving. ExxonMobil comes to mind. They've known about the impacts of carbon dioxide pollution for a long time, and they've kept that pretty much secret from the public, primarily because they have trillions of dollars of assets still in the ground, oil and gas, and they're concerned they won't be able to get it out and make a profit from it if there's too much attention paid to the negative effects of that carbon dioxide. So we have a mix of conspiratorialists, I think really sincere climate change deniers, and folks who are just deliberately deceiving even though they know better. So with that, I have no idea this case that I'm going to recount today what the motivation was, but let's just take a look. Like so much of what we see, this came to me via email, and I got to say it's well done and potentially convincing, especially to somebody who's already convinced, kind of an affirmation of what's already believed. The psychologist Carol Tavris points out that we like to say seeing is believing. In other words, show me the facts and then I'll form my beliefs or my worldview. In reality, what happens is just the opposite. We have a pretty firmly set worldview and we pick out facts that support that worldview. And this is true of everybody. It's true of me and it's probably true of you if you take a close look. So what it means is we have to be honest with ourselves as we dig in and discipline ourselves to pay attention to verifiable data, not just some theory put out by a guy in his basement with a laptop and an internet connection. So what I'm going to do here is read the text of the email just the way I received it, and then we'll dig in and take a closer look. So here we go. The Arctic Ocean is warming up. Icebergs are growing scarcer, and in some places the seals are finding the water too hot, according to a report to the Commerce Department yesterday from the consulate at Bergen, Norway. Reports from fishermen, seal hunters, and explorers all point to a radical change in climate conditions and hitherto unheard-of temperatures in the Arctic zone. Exploration expeditions report that scarcely any ice has been met as far north as 81 degrees 29 minutes. Soundings to a depth of 3,100 meters showed the Gulf Stream still very warm. Great masses of ice have been replaced by moraines of earth and stones, the report continued, while at many points well-known glaciers have entirely disappeared. Very few seals and no whitefish are found in the eastern Arctic, while vast shoals of herring and smelts, which have never before ventured so far north, are being encountered in the old seal fishing grounds. Within a few years, it is predicted that due to the ice melt, the sea will rise and make most coast cities uninhabitable. Then what follows is a somewhat tongue-in-cheek comment by the originator of the message, at least I assume it's the originator of the message, who says, and quoting once again here, "I must apologize. I neglected to mention that this report was from November 2, 1922, as reported by the AP and published in the Washington Post 96 years ago. This must have been caused by Model T Ford's emissions or possibly from horse and cattle farts." And just to confirm, I went back and took a look at that issue of the Washington Post, and sure enough, that's exactly the way the report was in the Post. So the start of a good deception, and that is, have something factual to base your deception on and go from there. And the implication seems clear that the climate is always variable and changing, and the stuff we're saying about the Arctic these days, i.e. it's warmer, ice covers receding, etc., while it may be true today, it was also true in 1922, and it's all just a part of natural variability. Conclusion, nothing to worry about. And those who are worried are just a bunch of deceived people who are running around with a hidden agenda and their hair on fire. So while it's always a good idea to check out the underlying quotes or data pointed to see if it's real, because sometimes it's not, that's just a starting point. So with a little digging, I learned that this particular email has been floating around the internet since about 2013. So it's not a new one, but it's got some traction, obviously, if it's still floating around. So a little bit of a spoiler alert here. I'll just tell you that what has happened here is a classic denier tactic, and that comes under the heading of cherry picking. What that means in particular is that when we have a large set of data, there are going to be some outliers in that large set of data. And the intent deceiver can take those outlier points of data and make a claim that's not supported by looking at all of the data. In this case, the claim is there's just natural variability, and I'll point out to you a little bit later here that while there is natural variability, the long-term trend, which is what we really care about, is that the Arctic is getting warmer, the ice is receding, and things are changing dramatically up there. And it's not just a cherry-picked data point here and there. That's the long-term trend. And I'll give you some data on that here in a minute. With a little more digging, I found a document written by one Tom Garreau, and his article, well-documented article, I might add, is entitled Long-Term Arctic Ice Trends and Global Warming. I'd just like to quote from the introductory paragraph to his several-page-long PDF. And by the way, I'd be happy to send you a copy of the PDF if you'd email me at tacoma@citizensclimatelobby.org. So here's the quote from Tom Garreau. "Those who seek to deny global warming constantly use transparently obvious tricks, selecting data from a single time, a single place, or both to deny the larger, long-term global patterns. This is easily done as climate is constantly fluctuating, so picking out the mean patterns and trends requires that one integrates the data over the largest time and space scales possible. So if one dishonestly wants to misrepresent the larger patterns, one can always find a particular place at a particular time that does not agree with all the rest averaged together. This is sometimes referred to as the it's a cold day in Wagga Wagga approach, and is repeatedly used by the climate change deniers to fool people who haven't looked at the data themselves. The changes in Arctic ice are no exception." In this paper, Mr. Garreau further points out that we've only had really good mapping of Arctic ice via satellites since the late 70s. And when one looks at the extent, you can see that it is quite variable. For instance, the extent of the Arctic ice around 1997 was significantly more extensive than it was around 1990. Just natural variability. But if you chart it all out from 1978 up to the present day, the downtrend is absolutely clear. And you can also look at reliable sources like NASA or NOAA, who report exactly the same thing. The chart that I'm looking at the moment is from the National Snow and Ice Data Center. Once again, a reliable source that relies on data, not on conspiracy theories and deceptions. The newspaper article referred to was from a very limited geographical area over a very limited time span. The area was around Spitsbergen, which is very much impacted by the meanderings of the Gulf Stream. The Gulf Stream has a major impact over time and in short periods of time in the Arctic, as well as the rest of the geographical areas affected by the Gulf Stream. So a small change in the direction or extent of the Gulf Stream can make a big difference in local weather. There's a very common version of this, and that is to take a particularly cold day, for instance, and offer that as evidence that the Earth is not warming, to say, this is not climate change, this is winter. One bit of data here and there is not much help without having the big picture of where that data fits in and what the long-term trends are. Keep in mind that when we talk about climate, we're typically talking about periods of 30 years or longer. Shorter periods than that are just weather. The paper that I've been referring to here goes on with data, mostly in the form of charts, which are really just about the only way to look at data in an understandable way for the layperson, and to see what the variabilities are and what the trend is over time. And everywhere we look at real data over time, the trend is the same, that the Earth is getting warmer, the ocean is getting warmer, the atmosphere is getting warmer, the amount of carbon dioxide in the air is increasing dramatically. By the way, if you want to look up this paper on your own, you can Google it. Do a Google on long-term Arctic ice trends and global warming, and you'll find the document I'm talking about, and you'll be able to see how well supported it is by actual data. Okay, main takeaway from this example is don't take things that you see on the internet at face value. Do some digging in. And I will emphasize that this applies to everything you see. If claims are made about global warming that you're suspicious of, dig in and find out where the data comes from and how reliable it is. In fact is that folks who are alarmed about climate change really do make the same error. They like to point at some specific event and say, well, there you go. That's proof of climate change. Not so. Not individual weather events are not proof of anything. Now, there is a asterisk that goes on this, and that is there's a new school of science called attribution science, where they are working to show how naturally occurring events like hurricanes may be affected by climate change. But hurricanes are not caused by climate change. They're affected by climate change. Cold days are not caused by climate change. They're affected by climate change. Okay, we're having fun now. So let's take a look at another one of what I will call climate deceptions. You've probably heard this one. It's been floating around quite a bit, and commentators on radio and TV who are climate change deniers, science deniers, like to point to this one, and that is, scientists were saying in the 70s that the Earth is cooling. Now they're saying it's heating up. How can we believe these guys? They can't make up their mind, so they can't be trusted. And once again, like all good deceptions, this starts out with a bit of verifiable data, and that is that there was an article in Newsweek magazine, I believe about 1975, that quoted some scientists as saying that we're in a long-term cooling trend and that cooling of the Earth was something to be concerned about. And the implication looked back at today is, well, scientists just don't know what they're talking about, so why pay any attention to them? So here's a direct quote from that Newsweek article. The central fact is that after three quarters of a century of extraordinarily mild conditions, The Earth seems to be cooling down. Meteorologists disagree about the cause and extent of the cooling trend, as well as over its specific impact on local weather conditions. But they are almost unanimous in the view that the trend will reduce agricultural productivity for the rest of the century. So what are we to do with this if we want to dig down into the truth of the matter? Well, we can start off with something very simple, and that is the popular media, magazines like Newsweek or newspapers, and especially today, internet traffic, they're really not good sources of verifiable and verified information regarding the climate. They often take scientific articles and they embellish or glamorize the scientific data into something that attracts readers or attracts clicks. I think this is true of all science reporting in the popular media. It all needs to be taken with a grain of salt, whether it's about the climate, whether it's about diet, or anything else. So let's dig in a little further here. First off, that Newsweek article was published in 1975, 40 plus years ago, and climate science, as you may imagine, along with all other science, has developed dramatically in the interim. But that's just a small part of the deception. The Meteorological Society has done a survey of climate papers from the era 1965 to 1979, asking the question, were scientists talking about global cooling or were they talking about global warming? They found somewhere around 70 papers that had been written in that time frame, and seven of those papers did say that the scientists writing the papers felt that the Earth was in a cooling mode. 20 of the papers were silent on whether the Earth was warming or cooling, and 44 of the papers said that even back then that we were in a global warming situation. And as the science has developed, the consensus has become clear, which is close to 99% now, that the Earth is in a warming phase, not a cooling phase. So back then we had seven papers saying that the Earth was cooling and 64 papers saying either the Earth was warming or not really addressing the issue. So you can see a massive stretch to say, well, scientists back then were saying the Earth is cooling and now they're saying it's warming. Really, scientists back then were saying it was warming too. And with further development in the field, the consensus has become clear. So here's a fun fact. The author of that original article in Newsweek, the source of this deception that scientists were saying the Earth was cooling in the 70s, is a science writer named Peter Gwynn. He's actually taken efforts to debunk the whole thing himself as the writer of the original article. You can find his debunking of that perception by doing a Google on Peter Gwynn, G-W-Y-N-N-E, and the article is titled, My 1975 Cooling World Story Doesn't Make Today's Climate Scientists Wrong. Part of his article includes a quote from the National Climate Assessment as follows, What is new over the last decade is that we know with increasing certainty that climate change is happening now. While scientists continue to refine projections of the future, observations unequivocally show that climate is changing and that the warming of the past 50 years is primarily due to human-induced emissions of heat-trapping gases. Okay, and here's what Mr. Gwynn says himself in the article. I'm sure it's clear by now that I accept the views of the National Academy, National Climate Assessment, and the huge majority of fellow climatologists. Nevertheless, websites devoted to denying the existence of human-caused climate change, or at least promoting the idea that nothing should be done about it, continue to use my article to validate their thinking. In fact, the article has reportedly become the most cited article in Newsweek history. So there you have it. Once again, cherry-picking is a key to this deception. To look back and find a very small minority of scientists saying that the Earth is cooling and use that truthful fact to create a myth that scientists don't know what they're talking about, that they say one thing one day and another thing the next. So why did the science deniers do this? Well, I imagine there's more than one reason. Some people have religious points of view that preclude anything happening on Earth that isn't the intention of the supreme power of the universe. They are entitled to that belief, of course, and there isn't really much to say about it since data doesn't have any impact on that worldview. There is a whole subset of our society who believe that the climate change alarmists, and by the way, I include myself in that group. If you're not alarmed, you're not paying attention as far as I'm concerned. Anyway, that this group of alarmists, really what they care about is not about the climate. What they care about is controlling other people's lives. So in that respect, let me quote from a writer that makes that point. And I found this quote on a website called The American Thinker, which is a key dispenser of climate-related conspiracies and denial. Here's the quote. If climate scientists spent half as much time and energy trying to learn to live with a changing climate as they do attempting to predict what's going to happen with Earth's climate a century into the future, we'd all be a lot better off. Of course, then there would be fewer urgent crises to solve, and thus fewer opportunities to pass far-reaching laws that attempt to control every aspect of people's lives. So to expand a little bit on that concept, the entire scientific community and folks who are concerned about the climate are lumped into one big conspiracy to control other people's lives. Now, I don't want my life to be controlled by anyone any more than it has to be, and I imagine you don't either. And as a climate alarmist, I'm sure as heck not interested in controlling your life, and I've never met one who is. And there's another subset of this worldview, and that is that the scientists basically are doing what they got to do to advance in their positions or to get grants. When we talk about scientists who write about climate, we're talking about tens of thousands of folks. So it'd be a pretty amazing conspiracy to think that all of those 99% of climate-related science papers are written by people who are conspiratorialists and who are just trying to advance their careers. So to just kind of sum up here, when something comes across your desktop that is talking about climate science denial, some of it's going to be pretty convincing on the surface. Take your time, dig in, and find out what's really going on. And you'll find typically that there's cherry picking, the key part of the deception. And cherry picking just simply means that certain facts out of a large database that support a point of view that's not really supported by the rest of the data is used to make a point. So is it possible to do something about CO2 emissions and the related climate change without having the government involved in our daily lives? And the answer to that is yes. And unfortunately, there's an aspect of political partisanship has come to dominate the conversation around climate. It hasn't always been that way, and truthfully, it isn't always that way right now. Richard Nixon is the one that created the EPA. Ronald Reagan was the one who signed the Montreal Accord, which addressed the ozone hole. Newt Gingrich made a joint video with Nancy Pelosi calling for action around the climate, and specifically around CO2 emissions. So how do you do that without the government being involved in your daily life? Well, the very best way would be to put a fee on carbon. And I got to interject here. Right now I'm talking about my opinion. And of course, there are folks out there with different approaches, and I'm respectful of those approaches. This is just my opinion that a fee on carbon is really the least intrusive way to go that's got the best chance of addressing the carbon dioxide emission issue. And there's a great conservative approach to this too. It's called the Climate Leadership Council, and George Shultz, who was Secretary of State under Ronald Reagan, is one of the leading lights in that effort, and essentially it calls for putting a fee on carbon wherever it's produced or brought into the United States, and taking those funds and returning them to the populace on a per capita basis. Turns out that Citizens Climate has got a similar proposal. It's in the House of Representatives right now. It's a proposed bill, and it's H.R. 763, the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act. You can Google it, take a look, learn about what's in there. And essentially what it does, puts a fee on carbon wherever it comes out of the ground or across the border, and returns that fee to households all across the United States. There's a group of 3,500 economists that have endorsed this approach. They say it's the best way to move as quickly as we need to while allowing the marketplace to be a dominant force in allowing individual choice and making the possibility of a cleaner environment with less carbon pollution and a time frame that actually we need to see. You've heard me say several times throughout this broadcast, use the term dig in. And once again, I'm going to call on you to dig in to find out what's going on with proposed legislation. By the way, there's another thing that's come up. The Senate's just recently created a Climate Solutions Caucus that's bipartisan. It's just gotten its start. It's going to be evenly divided between Republicans and Democrats who are concerned about the climate. So learn something about that too. I got to say that I believe, and once again, I'm talking about my opinion here, that the decisions we make as a society regarding climate and carbon dioxide are among the most important decisions that we will ever make in our lifetimes. So that's where the necessity for digging in comes from. We can't make those decisions on simple, easy stuff. We need to do the work, do our homework, and come up with solid ideas. And beyond that, we really need to be politically active. There's a limited amount that we can accomplish as individuals. We can accomplish something, we can reduce our footprint to an extent, but to really make the difference that has to be made, we need to be politically active. We need to join together with other folks who are concerned about the future of our environment, the future of our children, the future of our grandchildren. I think the very worst we can do is to treat climate as a partisan issue and end up squabbling while the environment that we live in, the environment we rely on for our very existence, is under threat from carbon pollution. If you're not a joiner, there's still stuff you can do that makes a difference politically. It does make a difference communicating with your elected representatives. So do that. It's pretty easy. You can go to the internet and just search out your elected representative in the federal Congress or the Washington State Legislature. Communicate your concerns directly to them. They count up who said what each day, and what you say does make a difference. And by the way, an email or a phone call is the best way to go. Letters get held up for a significant period of time because of security concerns. If you do want to use the good old U.S. mail, send it in a postcard. That'll go right straight through. And before I finish up here, just a little commercial for myself. I do presentations around the South Puget Sound, particularly in Pierce County, to various groups, church groups, service groups, retirement communities, educational institutions, and so on. So if you would like to have somebody give a good, solid, respectful presentation to your group, drop me an email at tacoma@citizensclimatelobby.org. Okay, that's it for today. It's been great talking to you. And here I am reminding you to always live like the mountain is out. Have a great day.